I did an experiment. I looked at my calendar from November 10th, 2 weeks before ChatGPT came out, to see what my calendar looked like back then. And I put it side by side with my calendar now, and it looks like I'm losing a game of Tetris on my calendar now. It's just stacked stuff all over the place. It's the greatest productivity tool that made us all busier.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Nordy Pod. I'm Pete Nordstrom, president of Nordstrom, and your host for this podcast. Join me as I take you on an honest, authentic journey through our company and introduce you to many of the fascinating people in my life, one episode at a time. Episode today, we're going to delve into a subject that, frankly, I don't know a ton about. I'm going to be vulnerable and honest with that here right up front. But the subject is AI, artificial intelligence. And what I hope to accomplish here today is to give you some perspective on how Nordstrom as a company is looking at AI and how it could impact our business. So to help me do that, I brought in the big guns here. So we have Ken Wurzel, who is our chief customer officer. And Ken, you've been with us how many years now?
God, almost 15.
15. You're almost officially not the new guy anymore. And that's been your 15 years, so congratulations. And Jason Morse, who is still kind of the new guy at less than a year, right?
7 months.
7 months, yeah. It's been a long 7 months in some
it's
ways.
It's been a fun 7 months, I'll tell
you. Fun
7 months.
And Jason comes to us from Walmart. So thank you, both you guys, for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
Hey, so real quick before we get into this, I should mention that both of you guys have actually agreed to take on some of the hosting duties for this episode. So thank you for that. So later in this episode, Jason's going to talk with a guy named Brett Greenstein. Brett is partner in data analytics and generative AI at PricewaterhouseCoopers. And after that, Ken, we're going to you where you're going to talk to a guy named Wesley Terhar, who's a co-founder of a really successful digital marketing agency called Media Monks. And for a little context on them, late in 23, they were named Adweek's very first AI agency of the year. But before we get into talking to our two guests here, I'm going to let both Jason and Ken talk a little bit about your history at Nordstrom and your experiences that brought you to the big jobs you have with us today. So I mentioned that, you know, Ken is our chief customer officer. And what goes with that is really all our digital businesses and marketing and quite a few things. So Ken, why don't you talk a little bit about what brought you to Nordstrom and some of the different things you've done since you've been here?
Yeah, I mean, what brought me to Nordstrom is frankly the brand and the customer proposition. I mean, I worked for a long time as a consultant for a lot of companies, and Nordstrom was one of them. But Nordstrom was noteworthy to me.
We were your favorite customer, right? Oh, that's why you came here?
You know, obviously. Yeah. And but it's because of the brand and the team. It's because we've got a bunch of folks here who come to work every day wanting to make customers feel good and look their best. And we've got a reputation to live up to on that. And so I thought there was an opportunity to come work with a team that was focused on a mission that I cared about, which was really to connect with people. So that's what brought me here. And, you know, I've done a lot of things, as you know, Pete, as I've been here, but I've spent a lot of my time in the last 5+ years associated with our customer-facing teams, particularly on the digital side. We still get all the advantage that we have of those folks we have on the front line serving customers that stand in front of them. But we also have all these connections every day with millions of customers through the app and through our digital touch points. My goal is to work with our teams to make sure we can continue to lead on serving customers and making them feel good, no matter how we're interacting with them.
And for Jason, and like, you know, one of the newer members of our team here at 7 months, and came to us from Walmart. And what I neglected to say as I introduced you was your title is CTIO. And just for folks listening, and we had to actually get clear what that even meant before we got started here, because as Jason said, it's a title I didn't even know what it was until I got it. But basically what it means is he leads our entire technology effort end to end and works with all the different business partners to have technology become the great enabler that it's become to help us serve customers well and create great customer experiences. So Jason, why don't you give us a little background on yourself?
Yeah, absolutely, Pete. I have been in retail technology for almost 25 years. So I spent 23 years at Walmart. And in that time, I got to really look at the whole myriad of technologies that support the retail landscape, from customer facing to in-store systems and point of sale and our payment systems, replenishment, merchandising. And so not only do I have a love for technology, I also have a love for retail. And, you know, I was at Walmart for a long time and had candidly not a lot of intention to leave. It was a great career for me, but got a call from a recruiter. Nordstrom was mentioned. It's a brand that I've always respected. And I had the opportunity to have a quick call with Eric and was so impressed that I talked to my wife, who was very excited about the prospect of Nordstrom, by the way. And we had the opportunity to go through that process. I got to meet the team and really was, as much as the brand and, you know, the promise to customers, it was the team here that I was so impressed by the mission and the way people showed up that just made me want to come in and be a part of this great company.
So I kind of want to switch now to talking about AI. And I guess I'll start with you, Jason, because I can remember even early on saying, yeah, okay, AI, and I'm getting asked a lot about this. And what do you actually think the application is for Nordstrom? So why don't you talk a little bit about just your understanding of it and where you see the opportunity?
I think the opportunity is evolving, but it depends on where we want to apply it. So you can use AI for you to support everything from personal productivity. So example, I was at Microsoft yesterday and we were getting a hands-on review of their new Copilot application.
So what does that mean?
Copilot. Copilot's basically like your own personal productivity assistant. So it enables you to do things much, much faster and maybe even better than you could do them on your own. So as an example, I can leverage Copilot to do things like summarize a 3-hour meeting and tell it to go and give me all the bullet points and all the salient points just for me. Another thing is you can ask it to do things like create a PowerPoint. So if I needed to create a presentation, I can give it the voice, I can give it the look and feel that I want, and it'll create an entire presentation on a relevant topic using information both from Nordstrom and also from the internet that I tell it to pull in.
Okay, that's interesting because it seems like that could work for almost any kind of business. So talk about more specifically the retail business. And when you think about, again, the capabilities of what AI brings, what would be an example of something that a customer could appreciate how it changes their life as a consumer?
I think an easy one for me is on-demand personal styling. If I can get that one-to-one relationship that retailers have long dreamt of. So I know you, Pete, personally. I know everything that you've purchased from me. I know your history. I know the way you like to communicate. You can leverage all that data to build a customized experience. And some, you know, let's say, hey, I've got a wedding in June in Atlanta. The benefit of AI is it knows that it's hot in June in Atlanta. And if you need to be dressed for that, it knows your style, it knows the weather, it knows the type of things that you would actually need if you were going to attend that event. So instead of, you know, having a stylist that's one to many, I could have your own personal stylist that knows your needs and your proclivities and your style and your voice.
So what about in terms of just the back of the house functions? This is something we've talked about a little bit, is there's a lot of activities that are done by people that might be able to be automated, and not in a way that just eliminates people costs, but actually would allow you to do it better and faster.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of things that we have done manually for many years just because that's the way they were done. One we have discussed, Pete, is item ingestion. So
right.
When I want an offer...
Well, explain what item ingestion is, not item digestion.
For sure. When I want to offer a new product on our website or in our store, the first thing I have to do is I have to get that item and know about its attributes, be able to make it searchable on our website, be able to understand its price, all the information about it. Is it a dress? Is it a pair of pants? So today we do that by leveraging a mix of information that's provided by the supplier. Then we have a group of people that sit and they say, okay, this is what this item is. Here are its attributes. Let me go type a bunch of these things in. You can actually leverage AI today to look at a picture of that item, to use the information the supplier provides and get about a 98% accuracy with all the work that's done. So today that work takes about 30 days.
That's right.
To go end to end. And you could cut that down, honestly, to just hours.
And do it much more cost effectively.
You could do too. It much more. And it's not just about the cost effectiveness of that work stream. Then you could take those people and repurpose them onto to activities that add more value to our customers.
Yeah, less people think we're just the evil company just trying to get rid of people and have it run by a bunch of robots. That's not really the idea. It's about how to leverage people to do what they can do best and let the machines do what they can do best.
Absolutely.
And have
absolutely.
Both.
Absolutely. And right. I will give you an example from my previous life. So, you know, we rolled out a ton of self-checkouts at Walmart. And people had the perspective that when we did that, we were just getting rid of cashiers. Like it was the evil company doing that.
Yeah.
But you see all of the buy online, pick up in store and ship from store that Walmart does. Those people, we actually employ more people now, or they actually employ more people now than they did before this self-checkout transformation. Those people have just been moved to a job that supports a new value stream for customers.
Yeah, I don't know if people always fully appreciate that, but we have that whole function of people running around picking items from the store and being able to offer it to customers. And that's a whole new thing.
It is.
That's a layer up. I mean, it didn't necessarily come at the expense of other things that we've done because we haven't been able to deploy some of these AI ideas, for example, like or self-checkout, some of these other things you talked about. So when you think about our store expenses in a lot of ways, we have a lot more hourly people running around than we've ever had before
yep.
to do these other functions. So Ken, I want to move to what you do. So is the Chief Customer Officer, a big part of what you're doing, obviously, is running all those digital businesses, which ends up probably becoming the touch point for a lot of ways that AI would show up to customer. But it's also true that you're working with tech in terms of the product management part of this and how to take these ideas and link them to the business opportunities.
One of the things I just build on that Jason mentioned is, you know, really, I think the exciting thing for us in terms of using AI and generative AI in particular is it allows our folks to spend less time on mundane rote tasks and spend more time on things where we really need creativity and we really need human empathy. Lots of ways I think that comes to light. But you think about our creative teams and our marketing teams. I mean, they have the opportunity to do what customers really want us to do, which is to talk to them about the stuff they're most interested in a voice that resonates with that customer on more of a one-to-one basis, as Jason referenced. And so I think even on the styling side, on the marketing side, what we're trying to do is make the experience richer by frankly doing what customers expect us to do, which is customers expect us to know them. They spend a lot of time interacting with us, whether that's on an app, whether that's in the store, whether that's by buying stuff from us. Customers want us to use that information to serve them better. So when you get an email from us, it's about stuff you really care about. When you show up on our website, it doesn't look the same, or in our app, you don't get the same experience that I get. You get an experience that's tuned to you. So we're experimenting with all of that, but I think at its core, it's the ability to superpower our folks. This doesn't replace the human part of this because we're in a business that's about creativity and about service. And those two things require a human touch, but it can be so much better when you combine it with data.
Okay, well, a couple of things. And you mentioned this right at the beginning there when you said AI and generative AI. I'm not so sure I understand what the difference is between those two things. So for those of us that don't understand it, maybe you can explain what that means.
It's interesting because we're all talking about generative AI, and it's in the last 6 months, it's really blown up. But, you know, we've got 20 years of working through a progression of what was machine learning and then deep learning, which was all about models. It was all about taking data, structured data and different forms of data to answer questions. Generative AI is really a revolution, which really allows you to take what has been a foundation of technology and now would apply it to a whole set of issues, but produce actual content, whether that's text, whether that's pictures, whether that's audio. And it's the speed at which that has changed that's amazing. I mean, you probably know this, but ChatGPT, I mean, is a great example. That took 7 days to get to 1 million users. Compare that with Instagram, which took 75 days. I think Spotify took 150 days. In 2 months, ChatGPT had 100 million people using it. Now, the reason that's true is because it's easy. Any of us can go use it.
So is it being used across our company? I mean, I know what that is and everything, but
I'll let Jason talk about that.
Yeah, the answer is ChatGPT itself is not being used at Nordstrom. And the reason is because when we put information into the engine there and say, search on it or, hey, make sense of this, it actually goes into the public domain. And so we have to take things like security and IP and privacy into account when we open tools like this. What it allows us to do, though, is to leverage Microsoft's OpenAI and the tenant that we have with them to provide a ChatGPT-like experience, but actually confine it to an area where we're protecting our data.
So when you guys think about the biggest opportunities we have with customers, as you guys both see it, I mean, how is that literally come into play here in your discussions the last couple of months as you're building our plans for next year?
I don't think it changes the entire basis for what we had, you know, gone from last year to this year, the continuity of the work we're doing. I think what it does is it allows us to have different techniques to accelerate some of that work. And also it allows us to do things that weren't previously possible. You know, the item ingestion example is something that wasn't previously possible. Now it is. Marketing is a great spot, and then HR is a great spot. So if you think about case management and helping unlock access to the support and the help that our store employees need without having to call a representative and spend time on the phone and do all those things.
Explain
just
to me
chat.
My benefits. Yeah. Or
hey, I have a new addition to my family. Yeah. You know, what are the steps I need to take? And it can go look at all of our policies and our benefits and provide back a relevant answer to that person so that they can get the info they need.
It's true for customers as well. I mean, you know, when you think about customers who contact us, they want to know where their order is. They want to know how to do a return. They want to know whether we have a different size of the product. These are all things that customers just want their question to be answered. They don't necessarily want to or need to talk to our folks about the simple questions. And when you do call, we can also, and we're experimenting with this as well, do a much better job of equipping our folks to know everything about your interactions with us so that you don't have to explain everything about your order. They already know. You don't have to explain about your last three orders. You don't have to explain all of that. So hasn't changed what we're trying to do in terms of serving customers. But I think the ability to do that is really so much more enhanced.
It's also not been changing in a linear fashion. So, you know, you talked about ChatGPT. If I look at ChatGPT-3, which came out, last year?
Yeah.
It had let's see, I wrote it down. It had a 175 billion parameters.
So what does that mean?
The complexity of the model and the number of inputs and outputs that it can serve. It had about 175 billion. If I look at ChatGPT-4, it's estimated to have 1.7 trillion. And so when you think about growth of these models, it's not linear over time. So it's escalating very rapidly. And the ability to do things is escalating along with it. If I look at ChatGPT-4, it does things like make a 710 on the reading and writing part of the SAT. It passes the LSAT.
It does.
Absolutely.
See, I wish they had these things around when I was in school.
You know what? You probably wouldn't be where you are if they did. So it's good they didn't.
So do you think in some way, I mean, because there's always this debate about are retail stores like ours still relevant because brands can just sell directly to customers? Do you view generally what's going on in the trajectory of technology as something that can make us more relevant to customers or perhaps obsolete in some way?
Well, I'll start. I mean, I think the technology absolutely makes us more relevant. I mean, the reality is that a lot of what we've done for a long time is serve customers and help make them feel good through our folks, the knowledge that our folks have who are standing right in front of them. We have an opportunity to have that experience be even better, to give our folks more of the data they need to serve that customer. But also we can serve customers better now when they're on the app or on their website in a way that feels a lot more like it does when you're in a store. It's more natural. I mean, we haven't really talked about it, but ChatGPT and these other forms of generative AI, they're going to show up also just in the way you interact on an app and on the website. It's going to feel easier. If you've played around with these tools, part of why they've taken off so easily is you don't need to know anything to play around and get value out of them. You just ask a question in a natural way. It knows why you asked it. It answers it. And then it remembers the question you asked. So then if you say, you know, that wasn't a very good answer, can you help me out? It can build on that. And the same thing's going to be true when you're on our app and you ask about the wedding in Atlanta and we don't give you a good response. You can say, that really wasn't what I was looking for. Can you help me out? And these tools are going to make it a lot easier for us to be able to serve customers without them getting frustrated, because we'll remember something about you, but we'll also be able to remember the question you asked before. Why is it relevant, and make it better and better? So I'm a big believer this is going to make us better at what we do well, which is help customers find really great product with a great experience.
So that means I don't have to lay awake at night about the existential threat of some development of technology that's going to put us out of business.
Well, you should lay awake at night because this is happening really, really fast.
Yeah, it is. But the it's like, you know what I mean, though? It's so, like we've got to evolve with that, right?
And, absolutely.
And we that's will. Right. But there are things that also happen in our world that change the landscape in ways that we can't control. But this sounds like something that if we're on it and we're working with it in the right way, it only makes things better here.
Yeah, I think the verdict is in. People do still want to go to stores to shop. Like, people do not only want to shop online. They want choice, and they want the experience. So they want the tactile modality of being able to go and touch and feel the products and try things on. Our challenge is to do that better than anyone else, to merge that digital and that physical experience together to make it the most relevant of any retailer.
Not only do customers want to shop in stores, when they do shop digitally, they want it to feel more like shopping in stores, in the sense of it's a natural experience. It's not just transactional. I don't always know what I'm looking for, but you help me find it. Sometimes you help me bump into things, at least in our categories, that I would have never known I even wanted. But once I find them, I'm like, that's really cool. I want to buy that. So I think the technology helps on both dimensions. It'll help support a better experience when you are in a store, but it's also going to make our digital shopping experiences feel more like the experience you have with a great salesperson.
100% agree.
Well, Jason and Ken, again, thanks so much for doing this. I mean, this stuff isn't exactly in my wheelhouse, so I'm really glad to have some Nordstrom experts talk about AI and the possibilities at Nordstrom. But let's switch gears right now. So I'm going to hand over the hosting now to you, Jason, and you're going to be talking with Brett Greenstein, who's a partner over at PricewaterhouseCoopers. He's someone who's directly involved in the development of their AI systems, so I know he's going to have a lot of valuable stuff to add to this conversation. So Jason, take it away.
All right. So, hey, everybody. This is Jason Morris. I'm the Chief Information and Technology Officer for Nordstrom, and I am here with Brett Greenstein. So, Brett, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Jason. It's really good to be here.
And so Brett is currently a partner in data and analytics and generative AI at PwC, so PricewaterhouseCoopers. And Brett and I had the opportunity to meet, what has it been, about a month or two ago?
Yeah, about 17 AI years.
Yeah, about 17 AI years. That's a great way to put it, at NRF in New York. So we were having a conversation, as you might imagine, the National Retail Federation meeting was all about AI. And I had the opportunity to speak with Brett and just kind of hear his thoughts on it. And so I thought, you know, Brett, you'd be a wonderful addition to our Nordy Pod on AI.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to talk about this. We had such a great discussion at NRF. And I think you and I both came from a point of view that generative AI is transformative. It's not just a technology. Everyone thinks of the technology, but it's really what it's going to do to change the way that people work and the way that businesses operate.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And as we get started, I think it'd be awesome if you just gave everyone a kind of perspective of who you are and your background. So you didn't just start looking at AI. It's been a long history. So why don't you tell the folks who you are?
So as introduced, I'm a partner. I focus on generative AI at PwC for the firm. And I do have a long history in AI way before it was cool. Working on various programs here at PwC and in my two previous companies, leading AI and programs around intelligent assistance and AI for a very long time. And I think we've all been waiting for a moment where AI was good enough to be useful in work at scale. It was useful for a lot of things that were very specific, but we've really been looking for that moment where it was going to be useful at scale.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I believe that moment has arrived. But you know what? We've believed that a number of times over the years. So, you know, there's this concept of AI springs and AI winters that have been going on since the 1950s, where, you know, a new revolution in AI will take place. And then we're all convinced that, you know, in the next 5 years, we're going to have the singularity is going to occur and we're going to have human level intelligence in AI. Tell me, how do you think about, you know, this turn of the crank, this AI spring, and how is it different from others?
Because I think it's an AI summer, and I'll say why. The springs were always about the promise. So every time it came, there was someone who showed it doing something very amazing that got everyone excited. It can predict this, it can do that. And so it showed great promise. And what really occurred, I think, in late 2022, when everyone experienced ChatGPT for the first time, was it wasn't that it was just promising, it was doing. And so what people are doing at work now with it is production work. They're able to use it as a coworker, as a part of a process, as a production service. And once you start doing that, there's really no going back. So the flowers bloomed, they've grown. It's a summer for so many people. And I think the other part that's interesting is since that moment occurred, it got better many times and it got cheaper many times. So in the year and a half that we've all been on a wild ride with generative AI, it improved with GPT-4, it improved with the latest Gemini with 1 million token limits, it improves with video and images. And at the same time, the price has dropped multiple times, which makes it more affordable and the ROIs get better. And so what you're really experiencing now is an acceleration. And I think, you know, I can't continue the metaphor of spring and summer. Everything took root and it's growing, it's thriving.
Given that, you know, PwC interacts with many industries and many other companies, do you have any exciting things or things that you've seen that you're super excited about, either from your company or that you've seen other companies do?
You know, the exciting things we see when we see images and video and things like that, it creates this incredible inspiration of what's possible. But also what is exciting is doing day-to-day work at scale with speed. So working with CFOs in a lot of companies who are doing things like processing invoices or preparing for investor relations meetings. There's all these things that are just things people do every day, but before they were human first, which meant they operated at the speed people could type, they operated at the speed you could staff. And now we're looking at people looking at these AI first processes where you're focused on the scale and productivity of AI. And while the activity it does might not sound incredibly exciting, reading invoices, analyzing contracts, handling POs, going through security logs, that's stuff we actually don't like to do as people. We would prefer to make decisions, to have insights, to move the business forward. And so I love watching AI taking over a lot of the work that frankly is tedious and slow and can do it faster and at scale, allowing us to free up our time for critical thinking and really hard decisions, which CFOs and other, you know, business leaders really get enormous value out of. And when they get value from it, it fuels further investment.
Yeah, I like the way you phrase that, AI first mindset. I'd be curious how you've applied that at PwC. And I know when we spoke, you talked about Chat PwC as you know one of the capabilities you have rolled out to your entire organization. Why don't you tell the group a little about what you've done there and how it's working out?
We thought it was incredibly important that we put the tools of AI in our hands of our employees. So we did roll out Chat PwC, which is a private instance, secure in our firewall, with our data for everyone in PwC. And in doing so, we wanted people to be able to use the tools to do the work they do every day. And that AI first thinking comes into play in so many areas. We're now doing videos of employees sort of showing how they use it at work. And they're really great stories, like people doing their 360 feedback. You could write your 360 feedback by hand, but what happens to all of us when we're trying to write that is we stare at a blank screen and try to fill in a form. And it's very hard to get started. It's also very hard to make it all fit in the form and everything. So a lot of people now are using it to create the 360 feedback based on their prompt. And then they just tweak it and revise it and edit it until it reflects what they want. The whole point is really the first words should come out of AI, not from you. And then you should focus on making it do what you want it to do. And when people do that, they can do 360 feedback faster because you're really eliminating the writer's block, the blank page staring at you, and you're letting the drafting be done. And then you're doing the refining. And the drafting takes enormous work to go from zero words on a page to 300, But if you can get the 300 words and then just refine them to be the 300 you care about, that's a much easier lift for people. It's also more interesting. I also see people doing it for software development, code generation, documentation, optimizing and fixing code. And I think the point here is you can write all that stuff down and then have AI fix the grammar. Or in an AI first world, you can say, give me requirements for an application that does X and let it creatively create that for you. And then you can refine it to what you want. And I think it really unlocks people's ability to try different things, to feel that there's less burden. Like, let's say you write something beautiful for work, a paper, something you have to summarize a document. It's enormous work to do. And then when someone says, that's great, but can you change this, 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 and this? And now you basically have to undo what you did and redo it again. And I had a boss once who had me do that 20 times in 24 hours. It's exhausting. But if you're generating the content from your ideas and you change the instructions, you can keep regenerating things with less of that burden of rework, and you can focus more on refining it to get to the concept you actually care about.
Yeah, I think that's a great call out. And it you know, one of the things that you mentioned was prompt engineering. And so when ChatGPT first came out, everybody talked about how I could write code. So I went out and I gave it some of the problems that I had as an undergraduate in school in computer science for whether it be operating system scheduling and so on and so forth. And it did a great job of writing the things that I asked it to write. But had I not known what to ask for, I wouldn't have gotten a great response. And so how do you think about the subject of prompt engineering, and also, you know, as that relates also to education?
Well, there's prompt engineering, and then there's whatever domain and discipline you have. Like for software development, if you were really good at prompting and you had it produce code, if you're not a really good software engineer, I don't know how you would know it was ever good code. And so the point is, someone asked me once, do we still need developers? Do we still need writers? You actually need great writers and great developers. But they have the judgment to know when things are good. And they also know what the intent of what they're trying to create. I was with a creative writing teacher, and she was asking me if I'd heard of this thing. And I said, yeah, I've heard of it. It's actually my job. I get to work on it every day. And she goes, should I be worried? And I said, well, give me an idea for a story. And she made up something. And I let it write a story right in front of her in like 30 seconds. And she said, I'm out of a job. And I said, but you came up with the idea for the story. And when you read this, you can tell me if it's good or not, probably better than I can. So you have the thinking that knows what a great story is and the ideas that generate it. All this did was the grammar and the mechanics of putting it together. And if you don't like it, you can try a different angle, a different way, and let it generate that for you. She was enthused. And I think what she's gone back, and a lot of instructors and teachers have gone back to, is they should ask students for their prompt, not for the answer. The answer matters, but the prompt that got you there shows the critical thinking and judgment that went into it, knowing whether you even know what you're trying to accomplish. I fed it recently all the works of Shakespeare just to see what it would do. I took everything that's ever been written by Shakespeare, dumped it into a chat interface, and then asked questions about various Shakespearean works. It answered everything perfectly. Like, it knew plots, characters, who died, all that stuff. But it didn't understand any of the beauty of the writing at all. It doesn't have the appreciation for what it is. And so there's a difference between being able to understand words, language, and patterns versus understand meaning and intent and emotion and feeling. And there's a role for all of us in that.
Yeah, I think that was really well said. And, you know, I've heard it, you know, put like ChatGPT, generative AI won't replace, you know, insert skill here. It will simply replace the individuals that don't adopt ChatGPT. So said another way, you know, the large language models, ChatGPT, generative AI won't replace software engineers. It will just replace the software engineers that don't use it with the ones that do. So you will be better because you're using it, not necessarily, you know, it's not something that's going to come in and replace you unless you don't learn and evolve, just like every skill has over time.
I'm sure there's people who had beautiful calligraphy penmanship at some point, and they were offended by typewriters. They were probably offended by the thought that somebody was lazy enough to just type these letters. But you wouldn't use calligraphy to write most of your work because it takes too long. And there's a time for it, but, you know, this is a different time. We need to be productive. We need to be effective and efficient. And we need to know what it is we want to create and when it's good. That's our value. And we can amplify that by having tools that can help us do that more quickly. So there's a lot of ways this could go. And I think as a society, we have to keep adapting to an evolving, you know, technology landscape.
You know what? I think that that is a great spot for us to end. As a society, we need to keep adapting and evolving just like we have for, you know, thousands of years. So this is the latest curveball, but it's not the first one. And so, Brett, thank you so much for being here with us on the Nordy Pod. Really appreciate it. Thank you for sharing your insight with us. And it's been super educational and just really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Jason. It's been a pleasure. And as always, talking about something we both love.
All right, so now we're going to hand the mic over to Ken, who's going to introduce us to another really prominent voice in the conversation on AI. Ken, take it away.
All right, so it's Ken Worzel. I'm the chief customer officer at Nordstrom, which means that I get to support a lot of the fun stuff in our company, including a lot of our digital experiences and our marketing teams and a lot of those kind of folks who help us serve customers. And I'm really excited today to introduce all of you to a really impressive guy that we've come to know by the name of Wesley Terhar. Wesley's the co-founder of Media Monks. Media Monks is a digital agency, an amazing journey you guys have been on. Started in 2001 with, I think, 4 employees, and last count over 9,000 employees working around the world to help companies and brands. I think recently you guys, very notable for this conversation, I think you got recognized by Adweek as the AI agency of the year. So you guys certainly know something about this topic. And I know, Wesley, it's one that you're super passionate about. And we've come to know each other a bit from our teams working together, and you guys certainly helping us on our journey to help serve customers. So I'm super excited and appreciative that you're taking the time to be here today and talk about this hot topic of AI. So thank you, Wesley.
Cool. No, excited to be here. And I feel I talk about very few other things nowadays than AI. So it's definitely the most pressing topic for us and for many of our clients.
Before we get into AI, maybe you could talk just a little bit about your journey with Media Monks and just your journey and your career and what's taking you to this place.
Yes. Co-founded the company 23 years ago. And I think what we've always done quite well is what we sort of call this search for relevance. Like, are we relevant now? Will we be relevant 6 months from now, 2 years from now? Which means we have had many versions of the company throughout those 20 plus years, because there's been massive amount of change in our industry, of course. And last, let's call it 4 to 5 years, we've really focus on building out a bit of a disruptive player at the big advertising marketing level, because there's such change in consumer behavior, technology platforms, that I think for a lot of our clients, they need to shift some of their more legacy ideas about marketing and communications and consumer experience into these sort of modern spaces. And I think that's where we've really had an amazing run of the last 5 years when you look at it through the lens of growth. And this sort of moment where Gen AI moves from toy to tool, I think is really quite meaningful for a lot of our clients. So we tend to be on the front lines of that change. Personally, I've never been more excited about a change in our industry. I think the technology is, it's one of the only times I think I've seen where the technology in many cases is ahead of what people think it can do and ahead of the expectation, which tends to not happen. Like, there's always a lot of promise and then a disappointment. And I think this is one of the very first times I've seen something that actually can over-deliver in specific areas already. So, yeah, amazing moment in time.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I saw a reference to, you know, everyone talks about, is this a hype cycle versus a game changer? I think everyone is in moving to the camp of it's a game changer. But I've also heard reference, and maybe for the layman, you can help us understand, because there's a discussion out there about this is, to give some context to how big an impact AI is, it's in the same league as when the internet first started and became accessible, and then the iPhone came along, which birthed social. Yeah. And AI is in that level of change, I think, in your mind. Can you talk about, from a layman's perspective, how do I get my head around what AI and particularly Gen AI really is and why it represents that big a change?
Yeah, and I definitely have it on my sort of Mount Rushmore. The main way to look at it is, and we'll use the term thinking machine, and there's big philosophical conversations around if you're allowed to say that, and what thinking means. But for all intents and purposes, we now have a technology that, as a brand and as a consumer, it's your eyes, it's your ears, it's multimodal in the fact that it can switch between image and sound and text. And the strangeness of the technology is that it's pretty much the first time we've had technology that can also get better at what you want or need it to do just by using it in the right way. Which means in some cases, people like my Mount Rushmore is very much at the sort of industry level, but there's a fair amount of people that see this as industrial revolution type moments and paradigm shifts, because it really just creates a completely new way for us to interact with technology and vice versa, which is exciting, but also a bit strange.
Yeah, it's definitely that point about excitement and anxiety. I know you deal with this in your own company, but the other thing I'm interested in is the anxiety that employees feel. You know, there's a lot of press out there and there's a lot of discussion about AI replacing people and what does it mean for jobs, what it mean for folks who do those jobs. So I know you talk about this in lots of contexts, but how would you talk about it to our folks? I mean, how should they think about AI in the context of their world?
What we have seen so far is that it's less about a machine replacing a human, and it's more that the best version currently is humans working closely with machines. So a machine can't outperform a human, but a human also can't outperform a human and a machine together. So a lot of this is, how do you get people to focus on the things that people tend to do really well? The high touch customer facing parts of the organization, which could be strategy or creative or personal service, or really the components that are, let's call it, high touch. And how do you use AI to solve the term sounds a bit negative, but everybody's job has a percentage of grind, right? Where you have to do it to get to the good stuff. AI in those spaces actually is really meaningful. We're also seeing it change people's jobs, because you're getting access to information in ways that historically were really difficult. It allows organizations to have more learning behavior, right? If new people come into a role, AI can be an amazing assistant for people to sort of hit the ground running. There's less complexity in making everybody understand the same information at the same moment in time. So I mostly see it as a way to make the complexity of human organization simplified. Doesn't mean there is zero risk. I think we also need to be honest that some jobs will change. Some jobs will be less important, others will be more important. I think that always happens in these sort of big moments of technological change. But my personal take is that anxiety about job loss is a little overstated, and we don't talk enough about the exciting part,
right,
or what it makes possible.
One other thing, Wesley, you and I have talked a little bit about, but you work in a creative field with a lot of creative folks. One of the questions with AI is really, and one of the points of anxiety, I think, is for creative folks, for artists, for folks who really sit in that space, how do they think about and how should they think about AI in that context of being an artist, being a creator, and how it impacts their world?
Yeah, that's where a lot of the anxiety definitely sort of sits. I've seen the following. So I've seen most of the progress in our organization be made by creatives first, because I think great creatives are curious. So we're seeing creatives embrace it, adopt it, and really figure out how it makes them better. I think we have to be a little less precious about what we perceive as purely a human skill set. I think creativity and creative output is now in part available for machines. And that's a really weird thing to say out loud, because having been in the space for a while, that was honestly seen as the last thing that machines would be able to do. Machines were going to be able to do everything except make art. And now we're sort of at the point that actually it does that already quite well, and that happened to be first. So that's just strange. But I've seen the quality of the outputs, the gap was still really big. So if you have somebody that doesn't have, for instance, illustration or animation or film as a background, the output that they will get from the machines versus somebody that comes from that background, the gap is massive. So there's still a quality differential. The bar has just gone up. Like, the floor is now, everybody can be good at art but the quality that you get from real craftspeople is way ahead of that, and they can do so much more. So for us, we actually had a big conversation with a client about this today. I think the natural instinct is to look at AI as something that potentially undermines creativity, but we've mostly seen it as something that actually makes us more creative, because we can get the ideas quicker, we can get the versions of output quicker, we can do things that normally would take weeks in hours or days, which allows you to spend more time thinking about things, strategizing. But yeah, very strange moment in time when you think about it through that lens.
Wesley, I just want to thank you again. I mean, this has been great. I could spend hours talking to you about AI, and I'm sure we will spend many hours talking about AI, but I really appreciate you taking the time to bring your perspective and your passion for the subject to our audience. Thank you for that.
Cool. Thanks, Ken. Fun chat. Thank you for the invite.
All right. Not to make this about me, you guys, but as I sit here and listen to all this, it sounds great. But does it threaten my job? And if I think about what I do around here is, you know, president of Nordstrom, I'm involved with a lot of things. But how does something like AI, I don't know, affect how someone like me does my job and how I look at the world here in retailing? Do I have to go out and look for a job here, Jason?
I wouldn't worry too much about being replaced just yet. I would say what
maybe my timing, how old I am, and the arc around when my retirement is going to happen right at the right time.
You know, I think that what AI has the ability to do is make you better at your job, not replace you. Like, it still doesn't have the creativity, the critical thought that's required to do the type of job that most knowledge workers do.
And I don't think any of us should sit here worried that technology is going to replace us in our job unless we ignore technology. The real answer for everybody is embrace it. I mean, because it's going to make you better at your job, but you will, and I don't mean you personally, Pete, although it's probably true of all of us, if we don't embrace it, we will become obsolete.
We're going to leave it right there. That was really good. So Ken, thanks so much. Jason, thanks so much. You guys are super valuable around here. I appreciate you both. And thanks for being on the Nordy Pod today.
Thanks, Pete.
Appreciate you having us.
Well, that's the show. We're really glad you're with us on this journey, and we hope you keep listening. The easiest way to do that is to subscribe to the Nordy Pod wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, please take a minute to give us a like, a share, and a review so other people can find this thing too. For more information about the show, head to Nordstrom.com/NordyPodcast or follow us on our Instagram page @TheNordyPod to stay up to date on new episodes, announcements, and more. We'd also really like to hear about your experience with Nordstrom, so if you have a story about how you've received great service or even bad service, send us an email to nordypodcast@nordstrom.com. You can even give us a call and leave a voicemail, and you may just get a chance to talk to me personally on a future episode of the show. That number is 206-594-0526. And you know, I'm going to ask for something I've never really asked before. We kind of asked for it, but not literally. And what I'd really be interested in is your feedback about the show. What do you like about it? What don't you like about it? Even feedback about potential guest suggestions, all of it. We're open to all your feedback. Look forward to hearing from you.